Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. From 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, here on UCY.TV Radio, we relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is February 27th, 2018. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here in Gray, Eugene, Oregon on the West Coast. I want to thank you for joining us. Please remind your friends and family they can find UCY.TV only on the internet, so they have to come to us and type in that, UCY.TV/AOF. We're here every morning at 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. And our affiliate here in Eugene carries our radio show, KEPW.org. And we want to give them a big shout out for carrying our show. That means a lot to us. Today, I'm really excited. I have a new guest on with us, and we are not going to use his name. We're just going to call him Truth, T-R-U-T-H. Because that's what he is doing. He is exposing some of the facts that we just don't know about. We're calling this program Nuke Plants, what you're not being told about them. So thank you, Truth, for joining us. We really appreciate it this morning.
You're quite welcome.
Yeah, well, I met you a roundabout way through someone else who suggested that I speak to you because you did work in the construction part of building the nuclear power facilities in a part of our country, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So why don't you explain to our listeners why you felt a need to just start speaking out about this? What brought you to this journey? Because that was obviously an industry that paid you well, gave you a good source of income for a while. But what happened that made you begin to think something's not quite right?
Well, the things that are happening around me, and that were happening on construction, the questioning of engineering and being told and seeing things that just were not correct. For example, I worked for several years in the field as a instrumentation and controls technician or mechanic. After that, I was promoted into the office as an instrumentation and controls technician, engineering technician. But, well, during one, what is considered to be instrumentation and controls, runs the whole plant. I mean, you know, without the instrumentation and controls and the control room operators, the nuclear, the actual facility operators, without them getting accurate instrumentation readings and everything, that is where you can possibly lose control of the plant and end up with another Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in Three Mile Island. They lost instrumentation readings. And when I brought some concerns to upper management and engineering, I was told, I was pretty much discounted. Even the Nuclear Regulatory Commission person on site had asked for clarification of an issue that had been going long going of the control valves that operate some of the safety related systems to the plant. Safety related meaning that they were in operating very critical systems. During a meeting with the quality assurance person on the site and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission person on site, I was asked about the integrity of the tubing that operated the control valves, which was copper tubing. For certain reasons on the safety related side, all the control valves that were on safety related systems, there was some question as to whether copper tubing was ample, whether it would really withstand any kind of shock or accidental damage. I kind of told them in the truth that the copper tubing could become damaged, because I was asked by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission person what would happen if that copper tubing going to the control valve that operated it, because it's air going through the copper tubing to operate the control valve. I was asked by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission representative what would happen if that tubing did become crimped or damaged. And I told him the truth, that it would slow or even stop the response of that control valve. Well, when I said that, the quality assurance guy that worked directly for the company placed his finger over his lid. Well, he said, but response time's not a factor on those valves. And I said, response time is definitely a factor on those control valves.
Mm-hmm.
When I said that, the quality assurance man held his finger to his lips in order to tell me to sort of hush that without actually saying it. And when I looked at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission person, he was conveniently looking away from the quality assurance guy toward the wall.
Wow. So they have all these hidden cues.
Well, at that point, I just folded up my notes and went back to my office and told them that when they wanted to know the truth, then they could call me back in. But until then, I couldn't help them.
Oh, my gosh. And this is standard?
Well, I don't know if it's standard in all cases, but it did appear to be just to get the plant online in time. The money to fund those plants was borrowed from the government at a 1% interest rate. And that was bearing on that they had the plant online in time, in the time allotted. If not, then the interest rate would have went up to 2%. Well, when you're talking about several million or billion dollars, I think I'm not sure the exact cost of the nuclear station, but there were probably several billion dollars invested.
Wow.
From 1% to 2%, that could have had a major impact on the company's stock prices, things of that nature.
Yeah, but making that kind of an error could cause a grave mistake, don't you think?
Well, on another issue... Yeah, it could cause a grave mistake. On another issue that I brought up to an engineer, and this issue had to do with redundant instrumentation readings for the reactor coolant pump itself, which is a very vital part of the operation of the station, or safe operation of the station. I was told that... I don't have time to explain that to you, because if I lose one reactor coolant pump, this was the engineer sort of quoting what he said. He said, even if I lose one of the reactor coolant pumps, I can still operate this plant at 50% power.
No regard to the effect of the environment or the health of anybody involved. It's all about the money.
Yeah, it was all about the money. It was all about the money.
Wow.
There's some interesting research online there. If you look at the Fukushima power stations and see the cost of the cleanups versus the cost that the power companies that run them are actually talking about, a $300 million cleanup versus the company's actual profits of about it might have been $300 billion. I'm not sure, it's online.
Wow.
But... you know, $1.3 billion a year, million or billion, I'm not sure which one it was, is their annual profits, where it would cost them 300 times that much to do adequate cleanups.
Wow. Well, so how long did you work? To be clear, you worked in the construction of these facilities, correct?
Yes, ma'am. And I was very knowledgeable in the construction of them.
And how long did you work on the... how many facilities did you work on?
Worked on two. Worked on one for a short time, just as a mechanic. And I worked on two. One was only for about a year, 8 months to a year. And the other one I was in for about 7 years, 7.5 years.
In the course of that construction, were you exposed to any radioactivity or had any negative health effects from being involved in the industry?
Well, I was exposed to a lot of chemicals. The asbestos, they're full of asbestos.
Wow.
Those stations are full of asbestos, along with a lot of other chemicals, plus on welds that were made sometimes during the nighttime, the what they called an X-ray crew that was part of quality control and quality assurance. They would have to come out and X-ray the wells. Of course, there were no other employees on site during the nighttime other than security personnel. But still, if the well did not pass an X-ray inspection, you had to grind that well off, which it had already been X-rayed with. Well, to X-ray it, they used a small source, put it inside the pipe, and actually put a piece of X-ray film around on the outside and X-rayed that weld.
What were they digging wells for, if you don't mind me interrupting?
Weld.
Oh, weld. Okay. Wow.
So to grind away that something that had already been exposed to, had already been exposed to the radiation from the X-ray source. I can't say for sure whether or not, but more than likely, yes, there was at least once or twice that I was exposed to some of it.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, because I've talked about this before, that in a nuclear power facility, it's not just the radioactive contaminants that is extremely detrimental. It's all the chemicals that go along in the plant to make it work. It's not some magic thing. They have to put chemicals in to make it actually work. And so are you saying that they don't actually take any real care to protect the workers?
Well, they do what is required of them by the NRC. But who is to say? I mean, there's not an NRC representative standing there watching you do your work. There's not a quality assurance or quality control guy actually standing there watching you do the work to guarantee that you did it per procedure.
Do you think your physical health was negatively impacted by this work on these facilities?
Not only that, but I feel like that everybody within probably a 50-mile radius of these stations, their health is being impacted by it.
What makes you say that? Like, and what generates that statement?
Well, when I look around and see the amount of people that are dying at younger ages, a lot of them younger than myself, it really causes me to question, because the average ordinary healthcare professional would not realize radiation poisoning if they saw it, especially low-level radiation poisoning.
That's actually true. They really would not recognize it. That's actually very true. So when you were working there, when you found things out and they didn't want you to report things, was there any repercussions afterwards from any of your superiors, or were you ostracized by your other coworkers, or, and how long did that continue for?
Well, during the turnover process, everybody in the office, I was in the office during the turnover process while the construction was going to turn the plant over to nuclear production. During that turnover process, some of my coworkers ostracized me for asking questions, because we were working 7 12-hour days for about 6 weeks in a row to make sure that everything was able to turn over to nuclear production. And one of my fellow employees came into the office because I had clarify the fact to some other people that this was not, that the boundary between the mechanical instrumentation and electrical instrumentation was defined as one place, but it should have been falling under the electrical part of quality control and quality assurance. And that guy came into the office. He didn't know I was sitting there because I wasn't at my desk. I was in another engineer, a new engineer's desk. He was an engineering intern, explaining to him the difference between how, well, what a thermocouple and a resistivity thermal detector were. That guy came into the office. He didn't see me sitting at the engineering intern's desk. And he said, that guy is going to several expletives, mess up this whole, several more expletives program, and we're going to have to do this all over. I did not confront him directly. I just let him stand there in his own embarrassment, and then later on he said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but that was his way, I believe, of trying to not get me to report him to supervision, which supervision wouldn't really care. He was one of the nice little boys that did exactly what he was told. Didn't ask any questions, but he'd never had his hands on a wrench out in the field either.
So this was actually before the facility was up and running. This was in building these facilities. So
that was
it's
the turnover process, yes.
Yeah. So it sounds like, I mean, we understand that the people who work in these facilities are under a lot of pressure to keep their trap shut, but you're telling me that even the construction people, even the supervisors, everyone along the line who were charged with building a safe facility are encouraged to keep their trap shut if it will lead to cost overruns or time delays.
Yes, even up to the engineers that designed the systems.
Wow. So this is how San Onofre Nuclear Plant actually, that's what caused it to be shut down, was they were going to replace a part that didn't quite fit in that facility. And that got leaked somehow to Barbara Box's office, and they held hearings, and that's essentially the pressure. But, you know, that was one of her questions in her hearings, is how could an engineer who understands these things approve this part to go in a plant that they know it doesn't fit? And what you're saying is that's just part of the culture of building the plants?
It was all about time and money.
So why can't they do it in an efficient way within the time frame? Like, how is it that they build these plans, they set out a structure? Why can't they build it within the confines of their time frame that they're given and make it safe? I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the... I'm going to briefly summarize it by saying improper planning. And I don't know if you're called the 6P theory. Proper planning prevents... Well, it's 5P. I'll leave out one of the expletives there. Proper planning prevents poor performance.
But it sounds like that this is a common theme, the improper planning. It's almost as if the proper planning is not part of the program.
Well, using engineering interns instead of experienced engineers in the offices to try to, an engineering intern will not catch what an experienced engineer will, but they can hire the engineering intern at a lot cheaper rate.
Oh my gosh. So they're building these power facilities with people who are inexperienced?
A lot of them were very inexperienced. I was quite inexperienced when I got there, but I wasn't an idiot. I grew up on a farm. I knew a lot about mechanics and physics. And I had some college background, although I don't have a degree.
Mm.
I did know physics and things of that nature before I ever went on the plant, before I ever went on the construction. As a matter of fact, that's what got me into the construction, because I passed all their tests with flying colors.
Mm.
And I knew how to apply those things to everyday work habits. But it also made me smart enough to ask questions. And they didn't like that.
Hmm. How long had you started working there when you started to notice that you were going against the grain by asking questions?
Well, when you go out, probably on the second plant that I worked on, I'm just going to count it, the one that I worked for about 7.5 years on. It was about, while I was out in the field as a mechanic, it was very easy for me to do my job, but it was also very easy for me to see oversights and see how some things were, what we were forced to use things, and engineering would not even release us a proper hangar standard or anything, support standards for our work. They did have quite a few procedures that were well placed, but they were constantly having to revise those procedures to make things better. After about 3 or 4 years of installing a job or part of the, I'm part of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
Go down, you would install it, and I did work in the reactor building. That was my area in construction. I was one of the probably 15 to 20 people on that reactor construction crew. You go down and install a job, and as soon as you get it installed, engineering would revise the hangar specifications, either because there was it didn't pass a seismic test, or there was some other concern with it, and you would be told, "Well, you did a great job, but engineers revised it, so you're gonna go back and tear it out." And to me, it was, well, at the time, I was a little younger, and it was just job security, and that's the way most people looked at it.
Hmm. Wow.
It was something that you just had to take in stride, or it would aggravate the day.
Didn't that lead into the cost overruns? I mean, like, when you're building something big and gigantic, you don't start building it and then decide to redo it. I mean, who does that?
That's what I was saying about the 5P theory. Proper planning prevents poor performance. It takes about Let me see here. I'll tell you the exact amount of time that that these plants came online. For example, the groundbreaking was in 1974, and the two units came on. One of them came on in 1985, and the other one came online for commercial operation in 1986.
Mm.
So you're talking about 11 years, which was actually running into a little bit beyond their, I think it's supposed to be a 10-year loan, like 1%. They were starting to run into an 11-year loan. You know, so for about a year there, they were going to have 1 year on one unit and then 2 years on another unit. They were going to have to pay, instead of 1% interest, about 1.5 to 2% interest.
Hmm. So when they redid the plans and made you redo the work, do you think that that rework actually helped improve the plant? Were these real true things, or do you believe that they just redid it just so that they could get the money?
Some of it was actually an improvement, but those things were reevaluated after Three Mile Island. Three Mile Island happened during probably my second year of being on the construction end out in the field. And when I say out in the field, I mean actual hands-on work, installing. Excuse me. There were some of them that were actual improvements, like the reworking of the routing of tubing procedures and training on that. I actually had to train people from other crews on the newer hangar standards and newer installation standards.
Hmm. Well, when this was going on, when Three Mile Island happened while you were working on it, was there any concern about, like, that they, did people know they were underplaying what was going on at Three Mile Island? I mean, was it a concern with the industry that, you know, the construction industry, that you were building these things that maybe Three Mile Island might impact the industry?
Well, my immediate thoughts, since I had been, I'd only been there 2 years, and I thought, well, wow, I've got a really good job that I like, that I'm going to be able to advance in and make a pretty good pay, but, and now here comes Three Mile Island, and wow, what's going to happen to my job? What's going to happen to this place? Are they going to abandon it and close all of them down? The stock prices on all any electrical company that was operating a nuclear power station, the stock prices went from about 35, almost 40. It was about the split, you know, when it hit $40, it was split, and that meant, you know, for every share you got two shares.
Mm-hmm.
It went from $40 or 38 something to almost $8 a share or less in less than a week, and that was nationwide on all our companies that were operating nuclear reactors.
Was there any discussion that maybe your plant, the construction, might stop because of Three Mile Island?
Well, the company I was working for was building another plant, and they had the groundbreaking done on it and had a lot of concrete poured and things, and they actually did halt the construction on it. And it was scrapped and sold to a movie company.
A movie company?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I can't remember the name of the movie right now, but there it was the movie. They used that site because there was such a large, enormous place that they could fill with water. And some of that movie was filmed on that site. They had scrapped.
What made you leave your job? What made you quit?
What made me quit? Well, after seeing the engineering concerns and being told, or the engineering concerns that I had that I could see with my own eyes, and being told by engineers that, you know, I could see the blatant, well, just call it lack of concern for safety and the safety of the actual operation of the plant. When I saw the first purple canister come in on a trailer, I was ready to leave. I just thought that we're messing with something here that once it gets away, once it gets out of control, you can't stop it. The nuclear fission process, once it's escaped your control, you cannot stop it.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at total meltdown.
Right.
Class 7 failures. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And with, just like I said, with even the minor issue, well, minor issues on major systems of replacing copper tubing with stainless steel tubing, which would have actually given more integrity to the system. And they could have done that very easily. It would have required more money on the labor side and on the material side, but I'd already seen them waste 50 times that much money because engineering didn't properly plan these things. That would, you know, and of course you got employees on the job. Well, in construction, they wanted to see you doing something, the 8 hours that you were there every day, they wanted you busy every part of that day. And I can understand that, but it's hard to be busy when you're waiting on engineering to get you an approved design to install it properly, you know.
Now, these facilities that you built, do you think that they're currently, that they were built to last and that they're being run efficiently, or do you think there's things that we're just not being told about? Like, are they running on a thin line? Like, could have a major accident, could not. I mean, how safe are they? I mean, how safe do they end up being? I mean, is the safety redundant or?
Well, they do have some safety redundant features to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I brought to the attention of the engineer, like I said before, on the bottom of the reactor coolant pump, there was supposed to be redundant instrumentation readings. I brought it to the attention of the engineer that he had all the instrumentation was differential pressure reading instrumentation, which meant that you had to have a high pressure and low pressure input. Well, it's very funny how they considered it redundant, because the high pressure line had three taps and three different lines running out through there to the instruments. The low pressure side only had one tap.
What?
And it went out through there and teed off at each instrument, which meant that if you lost the low pressure line at any point, that you automatically lost all three readings all three redundant readings. You lost the instrumentation readings on every one of them. Well, that was brought to the attention of an engineer, and that's when he said, I can lose a reactor coolant pump and still run it at 50% power. And I said, but why not fix it now? All we would have to do is tee off at the source of the low pressure tap, is to install a cross, what they would call a cross, is a four-way fitting. And then you would have three low pressures, which then you could call it redundant. He said, I can call it anything I want to. You know, I can still call it redundant. But you're not listening to what I'm saying. It was, if you lose that one low pressure line, you're going to blow the bellows out of all three of those instruments. So you will no longer have a redundant reading. I found out later, I ran into a person that was on nuclear production, and I asked him, I said, just out of curiosity, I said, I used to work there on instrumentation and controls, because I found out he was in the nuclear production instrumentation and controls side. I said, just out of curiosity, did they ever fix that? He said, yes, after they finally lost the low pressure reading, did something happen that damaged that stainless steel line? Because we were talking about 600 degree, you know, water, you know, high pressure systems. And he said they lost it. The operator thought that his reactor coolant pump was not functioning because he lost all his readings. So he hit the manual overrides. It blew the cover off of an NSW wastewater tank, and they ended up dumping about, I can't tell you the exact number of gallons, but it was into tens of thousands of gallons of water into the floor of the containment building.
Oh, my gosh.
That containment building, which was equipped with floor drains that were pumped out to, they were pumped out to hold ponds or holding tanks or whatever. But I cannot swear to you that every gallon of that water safely went into those holding tanks or ponds, because a lot of the holding ponds did not have covers on, still do not to this day, as best of my knowledge.
So what happens with those holding ponds, though? That's a good question, isn't it? What happens with the holding ponds?
Well, those holding ponds, I mean, you know, they had different ones. They had chemical holding ponds. The design on them was iffy at best. The routing of what particular chemical or whatever area of the plant, the routing on those holding or the piping going to those holding ponds was iffy at best as far as design goes. When I saw things like that, it just made me. It made me really question the safety that not only was I in, but the safety of people around. Well, all my friends, my neighbors, everybody within 50 to 100 miles of those plants, you know, would be. It just really made me question that, and I didn't want to be there anymore. When I saw the fuel come in and they were about to load the fuel in Unit 1, I didn't want to be there anymore. And they were giving me radiation training to be able to go into those hot areas. And that was a matter of job security that everybody wanted. But after seeing all the engineering, I just really didn't, because I saw the instrumentation that was put in there, and some of the instrumentation was really well built. Some of it was, well, it was being placed into an environment that it would not, it was not suitable for. It's just oversights. If you go online to nrc.gov, go under nuclear reactors.
Okay.
Go to power reactors, I believe it is.
Yeah. Okay. I'm on the website, by the way, so I'm doing exactly what you say.
Hold on one second. Let me make sure I got this right.
Wow.
Nuclear reactors, not mean new reactors.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. That's on their drop-down menu. It says new reactors. Talks about what we regulate, right?
Well, it's from the home page, go to nuclear reactors, power reactors, and then go down the page and hit pressurized water reactors.
Okay.
Are you there?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you see how clean and uncrowded that building looks?
Yeah, they have like a little drawing that looks like a nice little clean drawing, right? Like a little container with the core and the coolant loop, and it looks all neat and tidy.
Yeah. Well, when you go inside that building, what it doesn't show you is the instrumentation and all the miles of piping that go to other systems, other backups. It does not show you one bit of instrumentation. Now, they did that way to make it look like, oh, we got this under control. But if you also look at the diagram itself, you see because both of the plants that I worked on were pressurized water reactors. You'll see the, number one, the core.
Right
in the center. That's basically your reactor vessel right there. The core is not the reactor vessel, it's inside the reactor vessel. You can see where it says reactor vessel up at the top of that gray area there. You can see the control rods, which are used to control the fission process, how fast or slow it works. The bottom of that reactor vessel, underneath of it, there are probes that run up into it that show, that show the control room what they need to do and what they don't need to do as far as speeding it up, slowing it down, or whatever. There are probably 80 to 100 probes that run up into the bottom of that reactor vessel, run through stainless steel lines that are probably 1 inch in diameter with maybe about a quarter inch hole in the middle of it. And those probes run up into there. They tell the control room through instrumentation readings.
So let me be clear here. I don't mean to sound ridiculous to you, but that when they build this reactor core with all those things that are in there, the core, the coolant loop and all those things, those are big and gigantic, but nobody goes in there, right? They rely on their gauges, or do people actually survey to make sure all those parts are functioning?
Well, they try to limit people going in there as much as possible. Now, I would not be able to tell you for sure, but I would imagine that to repair instrumentation and things of that nature, that people do have to go in there at times to make any necessary repairs. But like I said, there are miles and miles and miles of instrumentation, tubing, electrical cables. The building looks really nice and clean right there and uncrowded, but a real life view of it, it's like a jungle of massive vines of cable tray, cables, instrumentation, tubing, piping, and any major event that could seismically affect that plant and cause part of it to fall and damage instrumentation cables or wiring would have to be repaired before they could safely operate the plant again. If you also notice down at the bottom, well, you know, I'm going to take you to a different website. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to take you to a different website. It's duke-energy.com. duke-energy.com.
Okay.
Scroll down that page to Catawba Nuclear Station fact sheet. Let's just go there.
Okay. Scrolling down the page. I'm at DukeEnergy.com, but it says, welcome to Duke Energy. Please select your state. Should I select a state?
Yeah, select, well.
Let's just pick one, huh?
Wait a minute. I'm going to back up one.
Okay.
On how, you're on the homepage, go to how energy, please select your state. Just scroll on down that page. It'll come up with a under related documents down at the bottom of the page. Get Catawba Nuclear Station fact sheet.
Okay, I will. Hang on, let me see if I can scroll down to that.
Should be right there for you.
Talba Nuclear. I actually don't see it. Let me see if I can just search for it. I'll put it in the search engine. Catawba.
Catawba.
Okay.
In Lake Wylie, York County, South Carolina.
Catawba. Sheet. See if that would come up with. Oh man, I'm not doing any good. Why don't you just read from it, Truth? Why don't you just tell us what it says?
Okay, well, I was going to show you another little. It's basically showing you there's a diagram on it. I don't know why it's not coming up for you, because it sure does come up for me. It's under how energy works.
Okay, well, let me look under that one, how energy works. Okay.
Okay. And when you scroll on down to
That's what I just said.
Do you see where it says a clean energy resource?
I don't actually see any of that. I'm getting a whole bunch of different things. So they are, I think maybe it's because you've gone there before, but let me see. Let me
take a look. It says knowing where your account is located will help us serve you better, but you don't have to select a state. If it just says nuclear power, if you're there, you're on the right page.
Okay. All right. So
anyway, when we get down there and you see the Catawba Nuclear Station fact sheet, punch on it. It's a PDF document. On the second page of it, it shows you basically how that this works. Got steam generators, and you'll see your uranium fuel, which is inside the reactor vessel and containment building. It's that big dome-shaped building there that they're showing you. Those are your steam generators, which they say that this is a three-loop closed-loop system. But, so from the steam generators, they're actually two big heat exchangers. The heated water from the reactor itself heats the water inside the steam generators, which are supposedly completely sealed from the from the radioactive, the highly radioactive water. So the reactor vessel, where the fission process takes place, heats the water in the steam generators through a heat exchanger method. The steam generators have thousands of tubes in them that are supposedly sealed from the highly radioactive water. Then the steam generators, in turn, send the water over to the turbine loop, which is, that's your turbine loop, the part that actually drives the turbines. Now, that turbine water is pumped back over and through the steam generators again. And it is cooled and condensed. If you'll notice there, if you ever do get to that page, it comes from a warm water inlet, which is from the condenser cooling water. And then it says that it's pumped out to the lake or cooling towers. Well, the McGuire Nuclear Station has no cooling towers. It uses cooling water drawn directly from the lake.
Oh my gosh, Truth. Guess what? We have 15 seconds left.
Yep.
Hopefully you can come back with us again and we can finish this train of thought. I really appreciate you being with us, sharing your knowledge. I encourage everyone to put your courage feet on. Thank you so much. I apologize for the short time that we've had here. Thanks again.
Okay.